What's up, everybody? Welcome to SWAT MMA, where we're smoking weed and we're talking mixed martial arts. My name is Jared. I'm here with Paul.
What up?
We're coming to you from Las Vegas, Nevada, fight capital of the world. On today's episode, which is number 107, we are going to be talking all about the results of UFC Dillashaw versus Sandhagen. Was it a robbery? We're going to talk about the surprising BKFC 19 results. We're going to take a look ahead to Bellator 263 and the return of our Fighter on Fire segment. Before we dive into the combat sports, though, you know what time it is. Grab your weed, fire it up, and let's get into the weed of the week. Smoke weed every day. This week, Paul and I are smoking and coughing down on two different kinds of flower and one kind of concentrate. You all right there, buddy?
Yeah, I'm done.
You sound like it.
Yeah.
That was that Puffco. What do you have? I didn't even ask you before the show. What are you putting in there?
Some cherry pie.
Some cherry pie. That's Granddaddy Purple crossed with F1 Dub. I'm not going to hit that today because my lungs are fucking shot, dude. I'm on the edibles for a minute.
Yeah.
But we got this joint right here. And in there we got some blue cheese. Today, blue cheese is a cross of a blueberry mail and UK cheese. UK cheese is a skunk number one phenotype, known for its pungent odor.
Pungent.
Yeah. It's, I don't like that word. Honestly, I don't like the way the cheese strains smell. I think they smell disgusting.
Smell like cheese.
Yeah. And not in a pleasant way.
Not even in a good way.
I'm like, I like cheese
like,
as a food.
Like old mac and cheese.
But yeah, I don't. If my weed smells like fucking blue cheese, I'm not really excited by that.
I'm not really excited by that.
That's just me. But on the That's flip funny. Side, which is weird, I really love the diesel strain. So apparently, if it stinks like diesel fuel, I'm happy. But yeah. Blue cheese, no. Nah.
You're more of like a pungent smelling.
More of a pungent odor. You like that? That's a nice word.
6% of the time works every time.
6% of the time it works every time. All right, we're going to fire up this joint of this blue cheese. Hope you are sparking up something delicious, hopefully legal wherever you're at. And Paul and I are going to get started with
the weekly wrap up.
All right, on the weekly wrap up. With our wrapped up joint, we had a lot of controversy this weekend in the UFC.
Yeah.
But before we get to that controversy, Paul, I think we should start at some of the fights we saw on the rest of the card that stood out. Not all of them, but a few that stood out. Namely, what did you think of the Mickey Gall fight, which saw him win in round one, about the 3 minute mark, with a rear naked choke?
I think it was Mickey's probably best performance since his fight against CM Punk. Like, like he's been on a serious downswing. And it's really unfortunate because, you know, he's one of those guys who was kind of brought in, kind of like a Sage Northcutt. He was on that Dana White looking for a fight.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that he wasn't ready for the UFC or that he's not UFC caliber, because I do believe he is UFC caliber. And I do think that he has still some ways to go, but he still has a future in the division. But that being said, he's had some kind of shaky performances and shaky, like,
definitely
technique that we've seen come from him, where you're just like thinking that he was gonna take this step and this leap in ability as well as competition. And I feel like he took that step in competition, but not necessarily in technique and ability.
Yeah, he's on a bit of a losing streak and not looking well in his last few fights. You know, he had his opportunity against Mike Perry. That was his moment, and then it didn't go well, and then it was kind of downhill since then.
Well, and before that, too, he had that performance where he looked great against fucking Diego Sanchez in the first round and then just completely gassed, and Diego beat him down on the ground, which was supposed to be his strongest place.
Right, it was
terrible. He's getting ground and pounded by Diego Sanchez. It was fucking 40. And then turns around and loses a similar fight to Mike Perry, where Mike Perry just took advantage of all his weaknesses again. And I feel like it's one of those situations where he needs to really, like, lock in, and I feel like this was a good step forward.
It was. He fought Jordan Williams. I mean, they're fairly even on the striking, but I mean, it was a quick sub. It was second sub attempt. Mm-hmm. Took the back real nicely. And I thought it was exactly what he needed to do. I don't know if he would have been in danger of being cut necessarily, but I don't know. We discussed it in last week's episode. This is what he needed to do. He came out and did it. And I'm a fan of Mickey Gall, so I'm happy to see it, bro. It's I think he's a unique personality. I like the UFC with him in it. And he's on the right track again. Let's hope that he keeps it up.
Yeah, I'm also a fan of his. So I really hope he is able to really get back on track.
How about Ian Heinz? Yeah. Lost again. The kid started off so strong, and then he loses in round two. He gets TKO'd.
Yeah.
Not a good look again for him.
Tough. I think that's his fourth in a row.
It was. I had a lot of high hopes for him when he hit the UFC, man, but he is just...
I think he could be in some danger of being cut, too. Another one of those contender series guys.
Yeah, I think so as well. I think he's... I would be surprised.
But at the same time, like, that was his first bad loss to, like, a name... someone who wasn't a name, if you really look at it. Like, his three losses before that were to Derek Brunson and Kelvin Gastelum. Like, those aren't any slouches, you know what I mean?
Not even close.
And then, so, I don't know, it's tough. It's tough. Hopefully he gets one more shot. You know, I think every guy deserves, like, if he's one of those guys who's come, I think he's already had, what, 5 or 6 UFC fights in the 2.5 years he's been signed.
And against high-profile fighters like you just mentioned.
Yeah, so, I mean, hopefully they give him one last shot to prove himself, and we could really get a real idea of whether he should be here still or not, you know?
Goodness gracious, that joint is hitting me. I need to get a drink here. A fight that really stood out to me for its controversy on this card, and it was a fight that we kind of focused on and talked a little bit about last week because it was fairly consequential, but we saw in the women's division, the flyweights, we had Macy Barber versus Miranda Maverick, which is was an important fight for Macy Barber because she'd lost to two, but they were both two up-and-coming fighters in the division. And what we saw was, Miranda Maverick come out and win the fight, Everybody thought so. I believe, ultimately she loses a decision to Macy Barber after she clearly won round one and two, and Barber won round three. Yeah. It's pretty shocking. 22 of 22 polled media outlets had Maverick winning that fight. It was pretty egregious. I don't know of anybody that, other than Macy Barber, that thinks she actually won.
Yeah. We both had texted each other and were like, yeah, looks like pretty easy win for a Maverick. And then, whoa.
Yeah. I was reading, I think it was MMAfighting.com, their article on the fight said they actually had the article done or getting ready to post it because it was such an obvious victory that he was just waiting for the final scores, which he figured, would reflect the 2-1, that they had to go back and rewrite shit.
I just don't know what round they scored for, because let's just look at it round by round. First round, I thought it was definitely pushed. The pace was only pushed by Maverick. There was very few strikes thrown by Barber in general. Like, not, there was very little offense from Barber to begin, like, at all.
Then she gets taken down.
Second round, I guess you could say it was competitive, but it was more of counters that Barber was throwing and Maverick was throwing combos. It was like a multiple shot to one shot kind of thing. And then in the third, obviously, I did think Macy was able to turn it up, and she, kind of hurt her a little bit.
She found her rhythm in the third. She had that spinning backhand, mm-hmm. back fist thing that landed.
Yeah, and it kind of rocked her, but it wasn't super obvious.
It was a hard blow, but it wasn't like she was on.
It was like a real nice chicken shot. Legs. Yeah, exactly. But to say that, I don't know, man. I still don't know how you could say Macy won that fight. I think it was a good she came on late and she showed that she was just having a tough time closing the distance and stuff, but that doesn't mean you win the fight.
Here's the final verdict in my eyes as far as Macy Barber. She won this fight, yes, and she's going to get another chance, yes, but did she improve on anything that cost her past two losses? No. And in reality, she lost, this is in reality a third loss in a row, except now she's not going to learn much, because afterwards at least publicly, she's saying she saw nothing wrong, no controversy, easy win, blah, blah, blah. If she doesn't turn something around, she's going to lose her next fight, most likely.
Well, she's at Team Alpha Male.
And, yeah, did you hear her corner advice at one point? It was sad.
I don't know.
Literally, Faber says, "Macy, you just have to hit her. Please try and hit her." That's your corner, your fighter, "Please try and hit her." Because, you know, Macy does that shit where she throws fucking punches from like 6 feet away.
Yeah.
That weird. Have no chance of landing.
That's where I think Macy's lacking. She is physical. She, like, when they get in the clinch, she wins a lot of exchanges against all the fights that she's had. Like, she's strong, and she's, like, she's just not aggressive, and she's not technical. Like, she's physical, but not aggressive. Like, when it comes to her, and, like, they're, like, she's had a few fights where she whips people around and, you know, like, throws, like, kind of, like, weird trips and stuff like that, that you have to have some kind of strength to control your opponent with. But, like, her whole sense of, like distance and, like, her striking, like, how to close distance, doesn't compute with me. Like, she throws overhands until she's in range and then starts throwing jabs. Like, what? Why do you have to throw two overhands to get into range to then throw a jab or straight, which you land, but what you just did was you made yourself look like a fool, I guess. Ultimately not.
Dude, to me, it's reminiscent of Ronda Rousey's strike.
You look like a fool in the judge's eyes, though. You're closing the distance with two overhands. You're two missed punches to land, you know, to go and attempt to land two other punches. Fucking close the distance some way else. Like,
it's terrible.
Like, I just don't get it.
It's terrible technique.
Yeah.
There's really not too many.
It just doesn't work.
So I'm off, unfortunately, the Macy Barber train as she's going to be the youngest champ, etc.
I think Macy Barber's the most wrong I've ever been about someone in the UFC. I'm sorry.
Yeah, unfortunately. Can't disagree. I was on that train, too. But, no, and she's not doing herself any favors with this victory here.
Yeah. You know what train I am on, though?
What's that?
The Brandon Allen train.
Mmm.
Let's talk a little bit about that Brandon Allen Puna Soriano fight. Both guys, fucking studs.
Decision win for Allen, right? Yeah.
Allen ends up winning a decision win, but if you're Soriano, like, I feel like that was all just a case of like being a little bit younger in his career than Brandon is. You know, Brandon has a little bit more experience, whereas Soriano was going in this way 8-0. Now he's 8-1. Mm-hmm. That's so young in an MMA career. Where I think Allen is 14-2, 15-2 now. Mm-hmm. But yeah, two guys at middleweight that have a lot of potential. And this was a pretty damn close fight. Like, I don't understand DC's commentary after the first round when he was talking about, or no, it was after the second round where he was like, yeah, Allen clearly won rounds 1 and 2. And I was just like, I don't know how you see that. Like there was, if anything, I thought round one was a fucking coin flip. Round one was like a coin flip of all coin flips. It was a battle of attrition, you know. It was Soriano throwing everything he had into every punch, and Allen just being really patient and, you know, throwing his jab well and not getting too overstretched or, you know, leaving himself open. But yet was still getting bombs landed on him, and his chin was otherworldly at some points in that fight.
As far as that fight goes, yeah, I agree with everything you just said. I thought it was excellent performance by Brendan Allen. I'm excited to see what comes up with him next. But you brought up a point there that I want to detour off before we get into the next bout. Mm-hmm. Real quick. As you said, I don't know what, you know, Daniel Cormier was talking about right there.
Yeah.
I thought that this was an especially egregious evening for Daniel Cormier's commentary. I mean, he says a lot of stupid things. I don't know why. As an example, though, at one point, after a fight was over, Daniel Cormier said into the microphone, "Body language after a fight is so important for the fighters." And let's examine that statement right for a second right there. So he's implying that having a victorious body language where you're raising your hands and acting like you won the fight is important after the fight. And he said it at a time when I can't remember exact fight it was. I'd have to go back. I tweeted about it too, where one person had their hands up and the other person didn't.
Yeah.
And he's saying, it's so important. It's just so important. So you're telling me that he's implying that the judges are looking at this and then going back and adjusting their previously recorded scoring because one guy, his body language looks so much better.
Imagine that. Just like 10-8. Oh, wait a second. His hands are up 10-9 the other way.
Yeah. Like that's and no one says anything.
Yeah.
It just goes by. And then the average person hears that. And what are they supposed to take away when they tuned into the UFC tonight and they hear that? They're like, oh, so they judge there's some judging based on body language, Bill? Why, yes, dear. Yes, apparently. Apparently, that's the scoring.
At the same time, too, when you talk about the Allen and Soriano fight, when he's talking about Allen clearly won round one in a gym where everybody can hear everyone, including the judges who are there.
Right.
Like, you're yelling out loud, yeah, Allen definitely won round one, zero chance. I was like, what are you talking about? Like, I don't know.
The guy, I'm going to use a term that actually I hate this term, and it occurred to me during the fight. And it's correct. He has fucking verbal diarrhea. He says whatever pops into his head, he just says it.
Yeah.
And then it's out there, and no one else is Daniel Cormier, so no one wants to correct him. And it's like, oh, okay.
Well, that's the thing too. Is like also, I do think freaking Daniel Cormier needs to stop being put on these Apex cards. Because every time he's on the Apex cards, all he does is try to fill the airtime with no crowd. And it's like, dude, shut up. But, like, when it's a three-man desk, when it's him, Rogan, and Anik, like, at a pay-per-view, he's a little bit more tolerable because Joe Rogan kind of takes the lead and he kind of plays off of Joe. But when you give DC the reins and you're just like, yeah, what are we going to talk about? Yeah, this week I talked about him when we were eating a cheese sandwich and he was telling me that he's going to hit him with his left hand. I'm like, what the fuck does that even mean, dude? Like, you know what I mean? Like, he says stupid shit like that and I'm just like, the two-man team with him and the Apex doesn't work. Put Felder in the booth or put Cruz in the booth at the Apex. But if fucking DC is on the desk, I need Rogan next to him because Rogan keeps the reins and where DC just kind of has more sound bites rather than like long ongoing stories about fucking last week and when he used to fucking know his coach and like all this bullshit that no one cares about.
Dude, it got so bad that like, you know how they display the tweets on the screen, which I can't stand that to begin with, but in the middle of the fight, you know, they got the tweets that show up on the side.
Yeah.
And so like some tweet from fucking Khabib comes up with his opinion on who won the round and Cormier spends, I swear to God, 30 to 40 seconds talking about what a great judge his buddy Khabib is. Well, I mean, there's action taking place. There's like a takedown. Yeah. Somebody's getting pummeled. And he was like, you know, Khabib has such a great eye for judging. I remember this one time. He was judging this fight in the gym.
Lord. Judging a fight in the gym.
Like, oh, my God. Anyways, that's...
That's funny.
So, anyways, let's shift back into the rest of the card. A fight that stood out to me here was the Darren Elkins versus Derek Minaire fight.
Mm-hmm.
Elkins with his classic come from behind victory once again. Yeah. It's almost cliched. You expect it, and he did it once again. Round two, KO, almost the 4-minute mark. After surviving some vicious sub attempts, as I thought he was going to get stopped. Taking a lot of punishment, bleeding. You know, it's an Elkins fight.
Yeah, Darren Elkins.
He takes a lot of damage, then he wakes up and wins.
Yeah, he's just... You gotta kill him.
Another performance of the night victory for him.
I do think had that not got the fight of the night, I think the freaking Allen Soriano fight should have got the fight of the night. That was... Between those two fights... I mean, the main event, too. The main event was great. The
main event was good as well, of course. Well, speaking of the main event, let's go ahead and talk about that. You ready?
Yeah.
Because we do wind up with some controversy in the main event.
I don't think it's too much controversy, though. I think it was just a fucking situation where it was a great fight, and tons of people are going to see it one way or another, and it's not necessarily like someone got robbed or anything like that. I think it was just a high-level close fight where really, you know, about, at least what I've seen online is about, like, you know, 60-40 split of people who, like, think TJ won versus Corey. Like, it was pretty, I think more people, TJ ends up winning, obviously, but I do think a little bit more people thought TJ won, obviously. And, but there is definitely some uproar of people that do think Corey won the fight.
TJ ultimately gets a split decision nod. I scored it for TJ live when I was watching. I thought every round was competitive, though, for the most part. I wasn't too surprised by the outcome, and I wouldn't have been too mad if they had scored it the other way. I don't think it was a robbery at all, not like the Macy Barber Maverick fight, nothing like that.
Nothing to that level. You know what I think it was? Just a case of two guys that were just following different game plans. I think TJ Dillashaw was ready for the, you know, he was ready for the long haul. He wanted to go all five rounds. He hadn't been in there in 2 years. He wanted to see if he still had it, you know. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, Corey is like, I'm so close to a title shot every time, and it just, you know, gets away from me. I need to finish TJ to really get my name into the, you know, title picture. And I think that was one thing is, like, I think you talked about a little bit when we're the night you were saying that he was backing up a lot and running away. And
maybe
I,
not running away, but definitely backing up. And we'll get into the stats.
Like getting walked down, basically. But my point being, I think that was also part of his game plan, because one thing we've seen Corey do a lot is he does like a lot of, you know, crazy explosive type moves. So I do think some of it is like backing up and resetting, but I do think a lot of it is trying to set traps for TJ to step into. And we saw, I think, probably the most flying knees ever thrown in a fight, pretty much. Like, I've never seen someone throw that many flying knees. Like, what the fuck was he doing? Like, some of them were even kind of, I was like, what are you doing, Corey? Like, chill out. Like, some of them where he got took, like, the one he got taken down on, I was like, that was kind of a waste of time.
Definitely.
Like, you were just way too close to him to even land that. But the one he landed, I think, in the first round, I think, after he landed that devastating one and TJ ate it, I knew, I was like, man, TJ's, he's still as good as he once was.
His size looked good too. He looked pretty solid. Yeah. Like, I hated his size small, at though. That at when he went down to flyweight. I thought it was just a bad idea, but
he's a little guy though. If you really look at like the division,
They're being the bantamweights.
Yeah,
but let's look at the numbers here as far as total strikes. You know, Sandhagen 171, Dillashaw 168. Significant. It was 128. Sandhagen 110. Dillashaw takedowns. This stat's a little misleading. You had 0 of 1 on Sandhagen's part, and then they credit Dillashaw 2 of 19, which is accurate when it comes to the technical definition of a takedown. But there was a lot of takedown attempts where Dillashaw was able to use that to get the back, spin around behind him, get him down.
It was a lot of scrambling going on.
Lots of scrambling, but he clearly got control from the takedown attempt. It just didn't qualify as a takedown. But it wasn't as if Sandhagen was stuffing 17 takedown attempts.
Yeah.
He was losing the position due to the attempt, is my point.
He's basically just grappling, and they kind of counted those as attempts when sometimes you're just trying to get the guy to fucking, you know, work a little bit.
Right. And there was one sub attempt from Sandhagen.
It was very close. Yeah. He had an inverted fucking triangle. Off a takedown, right? Wasn't it like he shot in on a takedown?
Well, he didn't
shot
get the takedown, but he got the position.
Yeah, and he just locked up like a upside down triangle. I was like, holy shit!
And then the final statistic, to me, is the one that really swung the fight, which is the control time. We've got 0 for Corey Sandhagen and 8 minutes and 22 seconds credited to Dillashaw.
That's big, that's big on the scorecards.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you have such a close fight, it comes down to a lot of that. It's possible, but it's very difficult, in my opinion, to win a fight when you're backing up 99.5% of the time. You can do it. We've seen, like, Silva, Anderson Silva's done that in some fights. But that's tough.
The only issue I take with that is he outstruck him in significant strikes when he was still getting gained on at the same time. He was still landing more shots, whether it be forward or back. It would seem to me that if you're landing more shots and you're still going backwards and they're more significant, like, honestly, I think every single shot Corey landed on TJ was more significant than the shots that TJ was landing. I think TJ was, like I said, I think TJ was playing the long game the whole fight. He was just going in there. He was, TJ always fights like this, though. Mm-hmm. Like, he's light on that front foot, and he freaking just goes to work. You know, he puts a pace on you that he was going to go out and try to break you. And I think that he wasn't really breaking Corey, and Corey was throwing every shot trying to put him to bed. And I feel like the when you're talking about advancing and, you know, going back and forth, I do think the amount of punches you're landing does come into effect.
It does. I think one of the strikes that Corey landed, I think one of the things that hurt him, and at least when it comes to the judging, was his mix of it. Like you said, he was throwing a lot of strikes, but they were mainly punches. When you look at the leg strike comparison, he landed 8 of 9.
Yeah.
And Dillashaw landed 41 of 45.
That's what I'm saying. That's Dillashaw's game, though.
Right. I'm trying to find reasons for the judging doing. Yeah, I don't know what they thought of, but where they're sitting, it's a lot easier to register a leg kick that lands than maybe a punch that may or may not be landing when somebody's in those positions. I'm just guessing here, but I'm thinking that could have also played a bit of a difference. But either way, I wasn't mad about the decision if it had gone the other way either.
And I do want to say something also, just real quick.
Yeah.
You talked about that 8 minutes and 22 seconds of control time.
That he's credited with, but yeah, I mean, but he was moving forward 26 minutes or whatever, 25 minutes.
No, I'm talking about the control time on the ground. He only landed 4 of 9 significant strikes on top.
Yeah, but I guess also in that under that
umbrella
of, thank you, of control time, I'm thinking of the fact that he marched him down the entire fight. I mean, obviously it's not 26 minutes in a 25-minute fight, but I mean, realistically, when they were on the feet, Sandhagen was moving backwards probably at least 95% of the time, maybe 90% of the time.
Yeah.
For what that's worth. That doesn't win you a fight, but it plays a difference.
We've seen other people lose fights in this similar way. This is a big reason why John Dobson's lost a lot of fights.
Yeah.
You know, this is a big reason why he lost to Peter Yan. Remember, Peter Yan was out striking him, but Yan was walking him down the whole time and matching him with punches. And got like a unanimous decision, 30-27, I think. Yep.
And it seemed shocking a bit, but it's the same thing. That's a great example.
So, yeah.
Well, next for TJ Dillashaw after this, he's calling for the winner of the now formally announced Aljamain Sterling versus Peter Yan rematch.
In Abu Dhabi.
It's like a pay-per-view, but not a pay-per-view.
Yeah, it's a pay-per-view. It's a numbered pay-per-view that is not on pay-per-view. It's on ESPN. Or ABC or something like that. But it's at like 8 a.m. It's on their time. So what was the last one? Wasn't it like 11
or
10?
That's why. They got some agreement to put it on an event probably at their time.
But it's two pretty big fights. It's freaking Polish Power versus freaking Glover. And then it's Jan versus Aljo.
205 championship, 135 championship, free on TV. I like it.
That's cool.
So I like TJ Dillashaw getting the winner of that fight. I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah. I guess so.
I mean, look, and I'm not saying that's not like I'm some fan of TJ Dillashaw, but I thought he came out, he answered the questions. Look, his gas tank looked great. His chin looked great. Physically, he looked solid. He still looked in shape. I didn't see any big transformation in his body, his gas tank, his abilities. Sandhagen is a tough out. That kid is a legit world-class fighter, so the fact it was a close fight, it should have been. That's why they were fighting. Mm-hmm. I thought he answered all the questions with a good job, sir.
I'm just saying, if Aljo and Jan have, like, a close fight, I wouldn't, like, be against having them run it back a third time than having TJ fight and have TJ fight someone else to really prove, like,
you know
what I'm saying? I'm just saying 35 is just such a fucking shark tank of a division to just give a guy a fucking title shot off one win.
Well, it's not just a guy. It is returning champion. I mean,
yeah, but he also just came back off fucking cheating. Like,
yeah, but he paid
that has to count against you at some point.
It did. He didn't get the immediate title shot, and he spent 2 years on the sideline. And I'm not saying that as like I'm no fan of TJ Dillashaw. I mean, I just respect his fighting ability. Like many fighters, I don't like personally.
Yeah,
but I mean, we can't deny the fact he did his time. He came back. He beat a top contender.
Yeah.
But and he passed all his drug tests. Man. It was close.
It's close.
As it should be. You know, they shouldn't feed him some chump whose ass he kicks.
Yeah.
So
have him and Cruz run it.
You know,
I don't know.
I don't have
35 is just tough. It's just tough. It's a tough division. Like, literally, there's so many guys I can think of right now that he could fight that would make sense.
We'll just have to wait and see.
What about Rob Font?
It's October.
Rob Font's just sitting there, like, coming off a sick-ass win like that, and he gets kicked to the side by TJ Dillashaw after fucking what? He's won 6 in a row or something like that? That's what I'm saying. Like, 35 is just such a fucking monster division that, like,
If he wasn't the champ who didn't lose his title in the cage, then there's more of an argument. But when, like, how many fights does he have to win before he gets a chance to just...
One more.
One
more round.
We'll see. Maybe he wants another fight. I kind of doubt it, though.
Yeah, obviously. I think what it'd make the most sense, but I wouldn't mind one more round.
All right. Well, let's talk about something other than that UFC card, which is an event that occurred before the card on Friday that, honestly, once again, I enjoyed overall event compared to event better than the UFC, which is BKFC 19. Now, I think that the higher skill fights ultimately landed in the UFC. That main event was great. That was my favorite fight overall from the weekend. Okay, but...
Yeah, obviously.
But event to event, I once again wound up enjoying all the fights on the BKFC card, with the exception, which we need to clear up right away.
I was about to say, what the fuck are you about
right
to say?
Right away.
I disagree with this statement. I disavow your statement.
Let's talk about these promotion bouts, TikTokers versus YouTubers that we gave so much credit to.
You gave so much credit to. I said it was a shit show.
But let's be clear. What was the reason I gave them credit? Because they were doing.
You said it was legit. They were doing bare knuckle. That's badass.
Who can disagree with what that?
Not do.
Jesus, I know you turned it on, the bitch. Like I don't support either of these fucking ass clowns, any of them. But if someone's going to bare knuckle, I'm like, okay, dude, that's ballsy. Yeah, no bare knuckles. They were wearing fucking 14-ounce boxing gloves at a BKFC event. Oh, God. It was awful. All of those fights were awful. I suffered through two of them. I missed the first one, thank God. I turned it on. Paul, I thought I turned on something else. I was like, oh, is there a rain delay like last time? Is this, they're running some other bullshit? Like, there's people are wearing gloves. It was terrible. It was effing terrible. Thank God they brought in their own commentators for those three events because they were like thinking it was awesome. So they hyped up everything that these fucking clowns did who knew no fighting skills here.
Yeah.
It was like windmill punching and oh, it was terrible. And that blue face shit was awful too.
Yeah, and then he got ran up on by a fan. He fucked him up. I was like, what is going on here?
Dude, they were bragging.
They're like
the
jumping the fan in the corner. I'm like, what's going on right now?
I don't know. It was terrible. I was so just, I take back every bit of fucking goodwill I threw at them for having the nuts to fight fucking bare knuckle. God, that was terrible.
It just makes me laugh so hard because you were like, it's legit. Because remember when I first texted you, I was like, what the fuck? Blueface is fighting bare knuckle. You're like, yo, dog, this shit's going to be dope.
I did not say that.
More or less.
No,
you
do
said
not believe
it was
that.
A good marketing promotion for the Bare Knuckle Fight League that they're fucking, that it was smart on their part. They could pay him a
and it wasn't
pretty
a main
solid
event,
purse,
and
it would
they were going bare knuckle. No fucking bare knuckle. I take it all back. They didn't hold up their end of the deal.
You can't unsend that text message.
you
sent me a straight up paragraph, and all I said was like, damn, Blueface and BKFC, huh?
Well, because I thought it was smart.
You thought it was legit.
And then I was sorely disappointed. But you were
just like every other YouTube fight so far, whether it be Jake Paul, Logan Paul, the TikTokers versus YouTube card, it fucking took your money for no fucking reason, and it was a letdown, just like all of them. There's not a single fucking one of these YouTuber fucking fights that I've watched, and I'd be like, wow, that was worth it.
No, it was so bad, they literally had to bring in their own commentary team because Chris Lytle and the other guy, there'd be nothing for them to say. It was terrible punching. There was no redeeming qualities from a fight skill perspective whatsoever. Like, none. So, that was a joke. Please don't do that ever again, David Feldman. Please, for the love of God, I hope your numbers didn't warrant more of that. But let's talk about some of the more consequential fights. Like, we had Britton Hart coming back. You know, we discussed last episode how she was low on the card when the fighter that she beat, Paige VanZant, was headlining, which was kind of amusing. But she fights Jenny Savage, and it was just an ass kicking. I mean, it wound up being a TKO, 38 seconds of round two, and it wasn't close. That was not even competitive. I was really surprised. I thought that Jenny Savage had a bit more savagery in her than that.
Well, you know, she's all on her high horse. She just got married, too.
Britton Hart?
Yeah, to fucking Joey Beltran.
I know, heavyweight champ over there. I don't know why I would know that was a thing, but I didn't know that was a thing. So I was
Come on, Jared, surprised. You're not up on your shit, bro.
Yeah, the love life of the BKFC fighters. I need to get caught up. Is there a show?
Probably.
No, congratulations to them, though. That's cool. But she did well, I thought. I don't know what else to say. She whooped that girl's ass.
Yeah.
The heavyweight showdown in the co-main event, I thought, was a great fight. Arnold Adams versus Mike Terrell.
Yeah.
Which wound up seeing former champ Adams get the big win with the KO at 38 seconds in round two.
So now I think that kind of sets up a rematch for him and Beltran.
I think so. And that's great. I think the only way we don't see that is Frank Mir busting his way in. But
which I can also see happening very easily.
Yes. I'm expecting to hear something come on that tip, announcement.
I'm surprised they hadn't asked Feldman after the fight about it.
I was surprised, too, because when Mir had his boxing debut,
he was all over the headlines.
Yeah, and Mir even got respect on a lot of the boxing websites that I read because
he boxed well.
He did well enough for a guy who's not a boxer. He didn't embarrass himself. He showed he had some skills and could hang, and I thought he showed that he would do very well in BKFC. That's what I took from it. I was like, yeah, I think
that his size is something that a lot of those BKFC heavyweights will have a hard time dealing with.
Real hard time.
Like for real. Like,
he's so much bigger than Joey Beltran. Beltran, for those listening, he's like 6'2", about 235, and he's not a muscly.
He's not even 235. His last fight, he was like 217 or something like that.
Yeah, he's low. Mir's 275.
Yeah. And he cut weight to make these.
He was cutting weight to hit 265.
Yeah.
And he's not out of shape. He's well proportioned, and not fat.
He's just fucking a brick house.
He's thick as fuck. His body is so thick.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous. And he gets a lot of power. I think he can muscle in on these guys because a lot of that shit, they start right at the line like that. He doesn't have to worry about takedowns. He doesn't have to worry about any jiu-jitsu shit, right?
Yeah.
He can muscle them up against the sides of that fucking
that clinch, I feel like, will be thing. a big help for like someone like him, because he was really good with that clinch in the UFC.
He's gonna get somebody up against the side on those weird ropes they have over there in that clinch and just start uppercutting the living shit out of them. And how many of those can you take from a man that big?
Not very many.
I mean, he shifts his weight a little bit, and that's like 300 pounds of fucking added weight pressure coming in.
Yeah,
it's pretty ridiculous. So, but if we don't see that, like we said, I think Arnold Adams definitely gets the next shot at the heavyweight championship. And that'll be an exciting fight either way around. However they go with that in BKFC, that's awesome. Yeah. I know BKFC 20 was announced. I don't remember who's headlining it. Oh, wait. No, I do. I do. It's
Blueface versus who?
Yeah. No, because Dat Nguyen left BKFC.
Yeah.
His title is vacant, so they are doing Reggie Williams, is that his name? Reggie Barnett?
Reggie Barnett, yeah.
Versus former champ.
Johnny Bedford.
Johnny Bedford.
And that's a rematch also.
For the vacant title. That's a great fight.
That's a rematch also, isn't it?
Yes. Well, it was scheduled, but then it fell through because Bedford got injured.
Okay.
So it was like we heard about it prior, but it didn't happen. Yeah.
Okay.
But that's a great fight. Both of them are very experienced guys. That's going to be a killer fight right there for that vacant title. Yeah, so that is BKFC 20 coming up next month. So that brings us to the main event of BKFC 19, Paul, which we saw Rachel Ostovich from UFC fame making her debut against former opponent Paige VanZant.
Yeah. Ty freaking made it 1-1.
Yeah. The short story is that Paige VanZant loses a decision to Ostovich.
Yeah, and a very, very shitty showing from Paige VanZant also.
Yes, it was.
It just really seems like she chose the wrong sport. Like, let's just be honest. I think she would have been better in Bellator at this point. Like, she just hasn't grasped the qualities of, like, what you need to do in, you know, boxing, not only alone, bare knuckle boxing, you know what I mean?
Well, Paul, since you bring that specific point up, let me go ahead and break that down further in our brand new segment, the Technique Corner. On the outside, she's got her high guard up. Sometimes she's shifted over to the side like this, and sometimes she's coming in straight forward. She has decent movement on the outside, but it's movement like this. My head staying in the exact same line while the shoulders and the body is bouncing back.
Phantom with the one. Ostovich resetting the orthodox stance. Snaps the jab.
She should be coming in more down like this, moving the head back and forth. Another thing that she's doing, she starts off up here. As she gets closer to engage, her hands get down here. And because her chin isn't tucked where it needs to begin with, it starts creeping up higher. So she begins throwing punches like this. See how my head is a wide open target there on the video screen? To make it even worse, as seen in several clips, as she throws, she'll sometimes pull back, which is a little bit of a defensive move because she's worried about getting hit by that overhand right coming from Rachel. So she's moving back. When she's doing this, she's sticking her chin up in the air. This is exaggerated a little bit, but it's happening quite often with her. She'll step in, go like this, and the chin winds up being up. Both the hands coming down here with these weird hooks. It leaves a bunch of areas open because her chin goes up and she's not pulling her hands back the way she should be, and her chin isn't tucked. She has no protection here.
Oh, knuckle up from referee Andrew Glenn. Here's round number three. It was circling off the line from Ostovich.
Now watch, one of the first things you learn in a boxing gym that I learned is first I spent about 6 months doing nothing but throwing a jab. All right, but what's real important is you got to have your chin tucked down at all times. Your chin needs to be down here and you're kind of looking up a little bit because then you can take punches and you've got a little bit of absorbance in there in your body. The blow is going to go down through your neck and into your shoulders. Or you're up here like this and your chin is up. You're getting smacked and you're just going whipping backwards. That happened to her several times through the fight. And as she's throwing, since she's throwing down here like this.
Touchdown is good on Ostovich right there. Touchdown is good on Ostovich right there.
It's also leaving the sides of her face wide open. Any seasoned boxer that's been training the way that she says she has been should be tucked in and throwing like this. If you're straight ahead, she should be throwing this way. She's got the movement, right? And she's got no space here. See? When my left is out, my ear and my shoulder are almost touching. From this side, there's blockage there. So I'm coming up and I'm throwing.
I'm not wide open here like she is. Then you can throw a jab, the hook, she can move around a little bit. All of these mistakes that she's making are, look, they're very, very basic. That any boxer, these are the first things you get drilled in. Chin tucked, hands up. Your punches are on a string. You go forward, that goes right back. You grab it and you pull it back. That's how I learned. It's like you're grabbing some shit and you're pulling it back to your chin. Your tucked chin, there's no space. Tucked here, no space. Side to side movement with your head. Not just your shoulders doing this while your head is there. You gotta move it around. If Paige can't correct these very basic fundamentals of her boxing game, I see no way that she's gonna be able to score a win in the BKFC against any fighter that has basic boxing skills.
Looking for the level changes. Big shot now. To the inside left hand right.
Now, it could be a disconnect between what's happening in the gym and what's happening when she gets into the ring, but I have a hard time believing that because Paige is a very experienced fighter at this point. She's been under brighter lights in the UFC than she is in BKFC. So I don't think she's just forgetting everything when it's coming in. I don't know if her boxing trainers are teaching fundamentals or if she's fighting in the gym exactly like she is in the ring. But either way, if she doesn't fix these items, she doesn't learn to keep this chin tucked under pressure, if she can't keep the shoulders rolling and up close against the ear when she's punching, and if she does not learn to stop with this, there's just no way that she's going to see success in this. And she might want to make a switch back to the Bellator cage, perhaps PFL, where striking, where the fundamentals of striking like this are not going to be so important. Because when you're in the, you know, BKFC or in a boxing ring, you're going to be focused on this triangle spot right here. Okay, so you can have all of your energy focused right here for the movement, so you can twitch and fire. Obviously, in mixed martial arts, you don't have this triangle. She can keep her guard lower like this because she's got to be worried about takedown. She's got to be worried about leg strikes. If it doesn't fix these fundamentals, I don't see any success for Paige.
All right, so that's my thoughts on exactly why Paige lost that fight. And, I mean, I don't think it takes a genius to figure that out, but I thought there was some very specific things there that I could highlight that... And it circles back to what you said originally before the segment is she's in the wrong sport because she's not adapting to those basics that I showed, I think, pretty clearly right there. Uh-huh. What do you think Paige does from here?
How long was didn't you sign a 4-fight deal?
She did, but there's got to be some clauses in there if she continues to lose.
I think she still fights it out. I think she fights it out, ends up in Bellator or PFL.
The best they can give her now is a co-main? I mean, they want to milk her name, but how long can you milk it?
Yeah.
I mean, it was not a good performance.
No. It was worse than the first one, I thought.
Yes. 100%.
Yeah. Rachel Ostovich, though, I think she only signed like a 1-fight deal. This was like her only like fight she signed to do because it was like Paige VanZant and she wanted a rematch.
Those right hands were legit from Ostovich.
She was fucking in there.
You know,
I was hating last week. Now that was really impressive, I thought.
Me too. I thought she did great. And I think that there's a couple interesting options here. Britton Hart also called her out, but Pearl Gonzalez is waiting in the wings. And she had an amazing showing, I thought, in her BKFC debut. And between those three, I mean, I'd really like to see Ostovich versus Gonzalez, actually. Yeah. Well, no, Beck Rollins is out. She was in Bellator or some other league, but she just signed a deal to come back.
Oh, okay.
So, I don't know if she was like champion in Recess or what she was. I don't know how that worked. But yeah, she was the champ. She was like the queen of BKFC.
I remember that, yeah.
And then she went and did some MMA again. Uh-huh. But I remember hearing that she signed and back. And
well, they've had a couple people like that. Like, that was what Artem Lobov was doing, too.
Right. They're cool like that. I admire the BKFC for letting
the fighters fucking do that, sports, you know? It's not really mixed martial arts. It's not like you're going... It's not like they were giving you permission to go fight for another bare knuckle organization. You're talking about mixed martial arts and bare knuckle. They're two different sports.
Right. So, I'd like to see that fight, Ostovich versus Gonzalez, or Bretton Hart versus Gonzalez.
Or Ostovich versus Bretton Hart.
Yeah, or Ostovich versus Bretton Hart as well.
But that's the thing. Is Ostovich going to stick around? Is this like her new home now, or was that a one-off?
From what she said afterwards, it sounds like she's planning on sticking around, which I'm hopeful for. I thought she looked great, and she did much better than I had anticipated. I thought it would be Paige showing so much more improvement.
Yeah, I did
not
too.
This, not what we got.
Yeah, Rachel looked good.
I admire Paige's attitude afterwards. I guess she's posting Instagram shots of her giving the middle finger and being like, "Fuck you."
Her
bitches.
Fucking hands were swole up. Holy shit!
Yeah,
I was like, "Goddamn!" For not landing any punches.
It's just I hate to just get so repetitive. It's just when the flaws are on such a base level that if she can't correct that by now, it's not going to, and you can't win in the BKFC with that flaw.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, let's just be honest too, that a big part of her UFC career wasn't like her dynamic striking.
No, I mean her win against Ostovich was a submission, wasn't it?
Submission, yeah. So I don't know.
It's be interesting to see how they play it out from here. I mean, BKFC is going to want to milk as much as left of her fame as possible.
Well, here's the thing, though. Do you want to do that if you're the BKFC? Because what you also could do is give her an out and hope she takes the out, and then you don't lose any money off of her, and you don't, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, because they're paying her a pretty penny for these fights, and for her to put these kind of performances on, it can't be very good in Fieldman's eyes.
Exactly, bro. The complete lack of evolution that she showed has got to be worrisome to Fieldman, and that, like you just said, that fat paycheck that she's getting. So
yeah,
we'll see. And where does she go? Bellator, maybe?
Bellator, PFL. I think PFL would make more sense.
I think it would too. Do they have a tournament for her size division in PFL though?
I don't know, but they switch shit up every season in PFL. So who knows?
We'll see. But I think that ends the weekly wrap-up. And that brings us to a returning segment for the second edition of our Fighter on Fire. Who do we have?
All right, this week, our Fighter on Fire is Adrian Yanez.
Adrian Yanez, who we just saw this past weekend. Mm-hmm,
fight Randy Costa. And he comes out with a performance of the night bonus once again for his third time in his three-fight UFC career. This guy is just, like we were talking about a little bit before, he's just another shark in a giant tank of 135ers that are just, like, there's just so many good fights for him. There's so many good fights for so many different guys, and I do think that he is now announced himself as one of the guys at 135 that people got to watch out for.
You're 100% correct. It's an amazing debut for a fighter to come into the UFC with three straight TKOs, three straight performance bonuses, in such a shark tank. But what's even more impressive is this is basically a pattern of how he does his career.
Yeah.
I mean, when he was an amateur, he went 6-0, and he had four straight TKOs to start his amateur career. Right, and then he turns pro, and he had TKOs. Okay, his only losses have come by one unanimous decision and two split decisions.
Yeah.
Very, very impressive.
He spent time both in Bellator and the UFC.
Overall, he's 14-3. He's got experience. He's got obvious power and skill.
Yeah. And I think he also showed that he's got a hell of a chin and he's got some grit. Over the weekend, he had probably the biggest turnaround I've seen in a fight. You know, he starts the fight kind of slow, just and gets peppered with the jab for a whole round, and then comes out the set. Never really flustered him though. You know, like he was getting peppered up and he was getting you know. But we never really saw him fold whatsoever or like show any like. like sense that he was going down. Like his chin stayed tough. He stayed in the pocket, came into the second round, ripped the body on a guy who had already punched himself out.
Oh yeah.
And just took advantage and just showed like some maturity as like a fighter. You know what I mean? Like it takes a lot of grit and it takes a lot of, you know, will to lose a first round very one-sidedly and come out and decide, this shit ain't going to happen, you know, and come back and not only win the fight, but TKO the guy in just the next round, you know? Like, what he did on Saturday night is nothing short of, like, ridiculous, you know what I mean?
In coming on the heels of his prior victory over Lopez, which was a 27-second, you know, KO in the third round, like you just said, it was that maturity in the ring, you know, losing like that and then coming back, super, super impressive. He got his stint into the UFC off of Dana White's Contender Series, which unfortunately I wasn't watching at that time, but that was in August of 2020.
Yeah.
Which he also, I believe, won by a TKO, correct? Mm-hmm. Prior to that, he spent time in LFA, Fury FC. A little bit of time in Bellator, as you mentioned, back in 2015.
Yeah.
So he's, I feel, hitting the UFC at just the right time in his career as well.
Yeah, for sure.
So absolutely. What do you think happens to Yanez from here as far as booking? Who would you like him to get matched up with? Do you have any ideas in that regard?
I hate to say this because, like, you know, it would kill one of the stars off.
I think I know who you're going to say.
But I think him and Sean O'Malley would be a fucking sick fight. Him and Sean O'Malley would be a sick-ass fight. Like, maybe up the ladder a little bit more, but I think him and Sean O'Malley is the fight to make. Both guys will just go out there and try to fucking knock each other out the entire fight. And I would love to see it.
Yeah, I'm 100%
maybe not next, with that. But eventually those two need to fight.
I agree 100%. I think that would be awesome. Sean O'Malley. Yeah.
That would be the fight to make, I think.
I love it.
But they won't make it because they're two prospects that are too good right now. I think
sometimes they do that kind of thing.
But at 35, though, you have like a fucking plethora of them. So like, what are you really going to do? Eventually, they all got to fight each other.
True.
You know what I mean?
Well, congratulations to Adrian Yanez, our fighter on fire for this episode.
Absolutely.
That brings us to what's next in the cards. There's a UFC event next weekend, Paul. Are you excited about it?
No.
There is a Bellator event upcoming. Are you excited about that one?
Very excited about that one.
Yes, sir. Bellator 263, and we've got UFC Fight Night Strickland versus Hall, which is the main event. 185-pound contest, Sean Strickland, Uriah Hall. Let's actually talk about that one, because you know why? That's it. There's nothing else to talk about on that card.
Yeah.
So Sean Strickland at 185 has been making statements. I like this kid. He talks a lot of shit. It'll be interesting to see what he says to Uriah Hall because it's in the apex. We're going to be able to hear it. He's known for talking in the fight.
Yeah.
He's tough. Uriah Hall is so hit or miss, right?
Yeah, but Uriah Hall has had some great performances as of late. And I do think Uriah Hall has like really had kind of a late career resurgence lately.
He has.
He's coming off that knockout win of Anderson Silva where he really ended up ending Anderson's UFC career.
And, of course, Weidman.
And the I don't want to talk about that. That's why I said the Anderson one, dude. Come on.
I know. Weidman's looking good, though. He's in the gym.
Sure
he is. He's recovering well, actually.
Good for him.
100%. This fight, I don't know. I got no faith in Uriah Hall. I think Strickland's going to beat him.
I think Hall wins.
I hope Hall wins because I'd like to see him actually live up to the potential that's been there since the goddamn Ultimate Fighter days. But
Hall's been in the gym, bro. He's been working hard. I'm telling you, there's like a whole like momentum shift in his career since COVID, which sounds weird because what ended up happening was, remember he had that fight scheduled against Yoel that fell out like three fucking times.
Yeah.
And then he had a fight with Jacare that fell out. And, like, literally, he lived in his gym for a year and a half and didn't live with his family. All he did was fucking train and sleep for a year and a half waiting for a fight. Training camp. Finally gets a fight, knocks out Anderson. Then he finally turns around, tries to get another fight. Obviously, the Weidman thing can't control. I guess it counts as, like, kind of the same thing as, like, Poirier. Like, you know, kind of a TKO, but not really a TKO.
Yeah.
And then... You know, now you go to the Strickland fight where this is like the UFC trying to figure out if Uriah Hall is going to be serious and get up into these like big high contender level fights, or is he what you think is going to happen? You know, kind of guy who's up and down, and when he gets to have his big showcase type fight, he tends to falter. And I don't think that's going to happen, but I see that thinking behind a lot of the UFC brass, and I see what you're saying. But I don't think that's going to happen.
I'm legit excited for that. Yeah. I figure my worries about Hall have nothing to do with his fighting capabilities. They have everything to do with what happened in the Weidman fight, and that Hall has a pattern, in the past at least, of when serious injury or trauma happens to his opponents, he tends to get in a bad headspace afterwards. Like, and I'm just expecting that to raise its head again, perhaps, and him to come out and be a little hesitant against a guy who's going to maul him. We'll see.
Think he's going to maul him? I don't know, Coach.
It's less of my belief in Sean Strickland and more of, I'm sorry to say, a disbelief in Uriah Hall's mental space. Not his mental capability. It's not like he's stupid. I'm just trying to say, he's like, see, a guy who shouldn't be fighting
much.
To me.
Yeah, he cares
seems like
too much.
I feel bad when he hurts his opponents type shit.
Yeah.
To the point where even subconsciously he might just have that second or two of hesitation or pull back, which is not a thing you want to have as a fighter at a high level.
I can see that.
So that's what I'm thinking. Let's shift over to the Bellator card, which is exciting. Paul. I mean, this is it. This is the final of the Bellator Featherweight World Grand Prix. We've got, you know, current champion Patricio Pitbull against undefeated AJ McKee. The winner's going to get not only the belt, but $1 million prize.
Two belts,
right. They get the special Grand Prix tournament belt.
And they get the featherweight belt.
Since Patricio is the current title holder. Patricio's on a 7-fight win streak. McKee clearly undefeated.
McKee is fucking dangerous, and he's big compared to Pitbull. Did you see their face-off a couple days ago? He was way bigger than Pitbull.
That was surprising to me.
Way bigger. He looks ready to go. Both these guys, obviously. But I think this is the beginning of the AJ McKee era in Bellator.
Well, he's coming off a first-round submission of Darren Caldwell with a neck crank.
That was the weirdest fucking submission I've ever seen in my life. But, yeah.
It was pretty sick.
It was intense. Remember, we picked it as
Caldwell,
submission
former
of the
champ.
Year.
Yeah, it was the 2020 sub of the year as well by several noted MMA organizations. And, of course,
I think that was one of our choices.
I was going to say, the most notable MMA organization in the current media landscape, the SWAT MMA podcast, also featured that as well on our 2020 Best of the Year award show, which you can find everywhere podcasts are distributed. But, yeah, that's a super, super high-level fight here. I personally am rooting 100% for AJ McKee. I want him to continue his undefeated streak and eventually wind up in the UFC.
Yeah, I hope so, too. But I do think if he wins this fight, that Bellator won't let him go. If he wins this fight and becomes a dominant champion, unless he leaves by his own will, Bellator will not let him go. They will offer him the most money of any fighter in the entire company, like, honestly. Because, you know, he talks shit.
He's homegrown.
He's good. He's a homegrown talent. Mm-hmm. He's fucking literally one of the most talented fighters in the world, I'd say. Like, he's like the shit he pulls off in the octagon is ridiculous. Well, I guess amazing. Not the octagon, the cage is ridiculous, you know. I do think this is a serious test for him, though. I do think that it is the test, not only like it's a launching pad, but if he loses this fight, it also could, you know, put a serious, you know, pause button on what his future could be, you know?
Well, this is it. This is his big moment. I mean, especially with the money involved, too. That's a huge incentive.
A lot of pressure, but
we talk a lot about fighter pay. It's interesting to me that, you know, a smaller weight class like this, the 45s, they're about to earn more money than...
Yeah.
I mean, is a 45-pound champ, is Volkanovski getting $1 million?
Shit, that's a good question. Probably, something like that.
Hopefully. Maybe. I mean, they all get a half a...
I'm just going to go with I would hope.
All champions, as far as I know...
Yeah, they get a part of the...
Get a half $1 million. I've never seen it less in the past few years.
Yeah.
As their base salary. But it's not a win-win. You know, like a show and a win. It's a flat fee.
Sometimes.
But I don't know if the smaller guys even get the pay-per-view points. UFC might tell them to fuck off, especially in the ESPN era.
Yeah, maybe.
Because they got that weird half a million thing, you know, where ESPN guarantees like a half a million buys. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But they're not giving points to a fighter on that. There's no way.
Yeah, you're right. Maybe it's on the base sales, actually.
So, yeah, if Volkanovski actually gets like points in this scenario, well, what if it's under a half a million so it doesn't count? So, like, sorry.
Well, you get points whatever that less number would be.
I don't know if ESPN would be willing to give up money because they're a separate company, you know what I mean? Since they're guaranteeing the buy rate. Let's say it was like, so maybe they get it on 100K, but I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's a weird thing. We'll never know. Unless it comes out in this lawsuit, but for real,
like how you sprinkled that in.
Shifting back to Bellator, though, great fight. I'm excited. Go McKee. I think we're gonna have a lot to talk about next week when it's over.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Rest of the card is decent overall as well. Nothing really stands out to me outside of. On the excitement level of that main event, though, we do have Usman Nurmagomedov, who is, of course, one of Khabib's relatives, fighting on this card as well.
Yep.
And a few others. Former champion Brett Primus.
Emmanuel Sanchez.
Emmanuel Sanchez is fighting.
A lot of former champs up
here. Yeah, it'll be an exciting night in Bellator. I think it's going to definitely be where the action is at this upcoming weekend.
Yeah. Out in LA. I think it's at the... Yeah.
It's at the Forum. On the 31st.
I think it's one of the last ones that's going to be there.
You know, speaking of what's in the cards...
It's getting blown up, you know?
The Forum is getting blown up?
Yeah. Getting a new stadium built over it. By the fucking Clippers on it.
I did not know that. Wow. Well...
Sad.
Be a good night of fights, though. That ends the show for this week, my friend. If you're brand new to our show, you can find episodes wherever you get your podcast, from Amazon to Spotify to Google, everything in between. We got video that we stick up on YouTube if you like watching a couple guys talk and smoke herb at the same time. We put all that information plus a whole lot more in one handy location. Paul, where is it at?
SWATMA.com, where you can head over there. Click the gear button, buy a t-shirt, and support your podcast, you know? And see you later.
Later.
Peace.